Are you interested in the various jobs being done and programs offered in your communities?
Yeah, I want to know about stuff.
Where should you turn to for such information?
The anticipation is killing me!
What better place than straight from the horse's mouth? It is time for your What Do You Think program, presented by WLEW and WHST. Here's your host with today's topic.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to AM 1340 and at 94.1 FM. And welcome to another edition of our What Do You Think program here on WLEW and WHST. I'm Nick Johnson. I'm joined today by Erica Stedman, and she is a prevention specialist with Huron Behavioral Health. Good morning, Erica, and
good
how
morning,
are you?
Good morning, Nick.
It's very nice to have you here. I was excited when I saw that this was coming up in our lineup to sit down and talk with you. Important stuff, I think, that people have a hard time talking about sometimes, so I thought it was really cool that we're doing this with you today.
Well, I appreciate the invite, and as my friends will tell you, anytime I have a chance to talk and be social and get out there, they're like, oh yeah, she'll do that. No problem. Yeah.
Well, I think we have that in common then, because I've never been accused of having a mouth that's too small, so very good. So you're here. I know we've got a bunch of things we can talk about. I know some of it was addiction and mental health well-being in general, so where would you like to start?
Like as you said, I'm a prevention specialist with the local community mental health, and that means I don't actually work with people one-on-one, but I get to disseminate information.
Right.
And that is, I've landed my dream job. The areas that I work in with suicide prevention, substance use disorder education, and mental health education, it just gives me a chance to get the good stuff out there, because we are in an age where we're inundated with information, and we've got to get through that to get the real story out there, especially with these hot topic issues and these honestly very uncomfortable issues.
We
talked a little bit about before we came on, all day every day is I am reading and research and talking with people about these topics, and it's just very heavy information.
Yes.
And sometimes even part of my job is to alleviate the heaviness and normalize a conversation.
Right, right.
About these topics.
Exactly. We're talking about how it's nice because you kind of create the bridge between people that maybe are struggling and don't really know what to do or where to go with it. And you're kind of the beacon saying, hey, this way.
Yeah, that's the ultimate hope.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And the ultimate hope is to change minds, and especially if there's just a lot of stigma out there, to get that to be released, because a lot is impacted by stigma and mental health.
Absolutely.
And you've got to start even knowing what mental health is.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know? Kind of a whole umbrella in and of itself of various terms. And
it is, because a lot of the terms are interchanged. You know, mm-hmm. you might in the same conversation, you could go from mental health, mental health challenge, mental illness, and it gets very confusing for people.
It is, because I know I was talking even I have the obsessive compulsive disorder thing, and you know, you read into that a little bit, and it's like you can get confused real easily. Like, well, there's the OCD, there's OCD personality, there's OCD, and many of them are like that. So it can have that effect if you're just trying to dive in without any real idea of where you're going. Like, holy cow, completely overwhelming. So it's nice to have a roadmap.
Yes, it is. And that's what we aim to do. I kind of work with all levels, seniors to littles, profit sector, helping sector, just any area where I can tap in. Just this past year, I was asked by one of the local high schools in Huron County to come in and do a series of mental health education lessons.
That's a great place to hit, you know, start, because, you know, that's a confusing enough time.
It is.
People's lives, you know, with everything changing and going on. So good place to start. Not to interrupt you, but it just hit me then. It's like, yeah, that's a great place to start. It's kind of right at the root of where some of that can start to take shape.
Well, you're looking at individuals who are in a firestorm of development,
yeah.
And it can get very confusing to know if those behaviors are a part of their normal development or if there's something more.
Right.
Because when it comes to mental health, you know, it's a person's condition and with the regard to their psychological and emotional well-being. Mm. And so we all have it because we all have brains.
Right, right. Yes, exactly.
Yes,
some would accuse me of maybe lacking that, but we all have something anyway.
One time at an event, I made people raise their hand, who in here doesn't have a brain? And I got lots of confusing looks. And you know, and it was just an intro to an assembly, to a talk.
Yeah.
But the darkness around mental health is people don't understand that they need to take care of their brains.
Right.
With any other physical condition, any other organ, you strive to take care of it. It's just, unfortunately, with mental health, it's a lot harder. You're going to know when you see signs and symptoms, when you see those significant changes in emotion, thinking, and behaviors.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and then the discussion becomes, is this real?
Yeah.
Because there's the attitude of, oh, they're following a trend, they're overreacting, why are they this way? And it stops a person from even beginning to assess a problem. Because, you know, when I'm not feeling well, I go to the doctor, maybe through some sort of blood test, all my antibodies and everything can tell me. When it comes to diagnosing mental health problems,
it's a lot
harder game.
It's not tactile.
Yes.
You know, it's not visual. I mean, mm-hmm. some of it is if you get like some visual symptoms of mm-hmm. it, but it's not something you can see. It's not something you can feel. It's mm-hmm. not something, you know, and then I think what you said too, it's hard sometimes. I mean, my kids are younger, but even with my kids, because I know I struggle with some things and I'm watching them, I'm always thinking to myself, is this a thing or is this just part of the normal kid phase thing? You know, and so it gets a little confusing. And but definitely if there is an issue, should be addressed. My mom always put it to me like this, because I would say, I don't know, it's just, you know, I don't know if I like the idea of this or doing this or taking this medicine, blah blah blah. And she's like, so I have a thyroid issue, should I just quit taking my medicine?
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, it's an issue, it's a thing, you
know?
So you got to address it, just like as if it were a thyroid or a knee problem or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know?
When I was a kid, I didn't have a big friend group, and a lot of people didn't understand me, and I didn't understand what was going on.
No.
What now I have been formally diagnosed with is anxiety disorder and depressive disorder, and I've also survived 2 suicide attempts.
Well, thank God for that. That not the attempts, but that you're here.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, well, and I thank God too, but it took a lot of learning and understanding and following the right treatment path.
Yeah.
I'm so glad now we're at a point where we have a lot more avenues of messaging. So hopefully kids don't have to struggle like I struggled, because now I went from struggling to living with.
Yeah.
But it is hard to explain to people what it feels like.
It is. You know, it's very difficult.
Because you get the comments, well, like, that's so silly why you're so worried about that. That's not even a real thing
to worry about. Yeah.
And no, I don't understand what's bothering you so much, why you can't get out of bed. And
yes.
These feelings, when they go untreated, they are crippling. You know,
absolutely.
The same way, I had a back surgery. And it was a pretty invasive procedure. And I was given a very strict recovery time and recovery process. And even for me, who's more active and moving, I mean, I couldn't lift above 5 pounds. I couldn't push, pull, twist.
Very limited.
I had significant time off from my job. And I have an office job. Yes, I do travel around. I'm out and about in the community. So those were all the things were obvious. But they explained to me all of the things that could go wrong in my healing process.
If I didn't follow
those doctor recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So again, with mental, unless like we examine brain scans.
Yeah.
You know, to see what areas of the brain are firing off in a person with depressive disorder versus somebody who's not, you can't really understand. And then it is difficult with, you know, playing the medication game.
Yeah.
Luckily, they have a technology available. It's called a gene site swab.
I just did that literally a few days ago.
Nice.
And I'm changing the medicine I've been taking, because they said, yeah, it looks like the one you're on is on the not recommended for your metabolistic process rather. So it, I'll let you talk about that more too, but that it was really interesting. It's the technology available now that can maybe avoid some of the, or cut down on the hit or miss.
Yeah.
Like, well, we'll try this, see how it goes. Eh, not so great. We'll try this one and see how it goes. Eh, a little better, but.
Yeah, because you have to give it some periods of adjustment.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, I looked at some of the medications and I thought, oh yeah, I remember my past history with that.
On that one,
and
yeah.
Yep, I remember how I felt. And, you know, it's about just listening.
Yeah.
And opening up for that.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we just need to open the dialogue.
Yeah. And it seems like, I think it's more than it had been in the past too, you know, a little bit easier for you. Don't mind me. I don't know if you're getting pulled on that at all. We have a little more length there. We're fixing things up in the studio here, giving her a little more, little longer leash to work with there.
Yeah, don't give me too much power. I might go corrupt. That's all of a sudden you'll just see me on the TV.
That's all right. Hey, skyrocketing right up there and to an even bigger audience to be able to get your message out there. For sure. So, but yeah, that gene site therapy, I think that's a great thing, and just all the different kinds of technologies and all of that to be helpful with making it a little bit easier, fluid of a process for people to be able to get some help if they need it.
Yeah.
And that's very good. And then sometimes I think, so what do you think, like, you, if you're wondering about, like, even like I said, just as an example, like kids in general, and you're wondering, like, yeah, you know, I know I kind of struggle with this, is what I'm seeing passed down to them, or is this just a natural phase for kids? I mean, what do you think if someone's struggling with something like that? Maybe you check into some of the resources if you're not sure, and you can kind of just start to see, and then maybe you get in contact with someone who maybe knows that a little better. I mean, just as an example of one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you, if you're the adult in the house and you're noticing these things, the person who's going through it needs to know it's an open environment and needs to know that you're noticing and just being careful about the things that you say and observing behaviors.
Yeah.
You
what's
know,
consistent behaviors,
right,
maybe?
Like, what was consistent and not consistent?
Not
is it
just
their,
a one-off.
A change in their appearance? Is it a change in their, you know, their emotional responses, their thinking, their behaviors? And, you know, and finding a time when it's not confrontational and sitting down and inviting them to look together, inviting them to be able to talk about what they want to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
As I understand, you know, they're kids, they're in your household, you do have domain because you have that responsibility of taking care of them. But in these kind of aspects, you would almost want to approach it the same way as the conversation, like with an adult. You want to respect the space, but not too much. And you display your caring. I am concerned about these things because I am seeing a negative consequence for these things. And so you're not labeling the person. You're not making them their illness.
Addressing the issue rather than...
Yeah, and learning, and then you spend a little time. I mean, with mental health conditions now, they are so common. There's a lot of credible evidence on the internet. You probably need to go about 5 clicks down, get past the sponsored ads. But, like, there's National Alliance of Mental Illness. That's a credible website that will have, you know, American Psychological Association. You can go to the Huron Behavioral Health website to look for things.
Yeah, you guys have a nice website. I was checking that out. It's very user-friendly, very clean, easy to find what you're looking for.
Yeah, the IT guy will appreciate
that. Tell him I gave him a shout-out because he did a good job. What do you think that, I've wondered this myself, do you think the mental health issues, are they more prevalent now or are they just more in the light now? You know, like, even like you'll hear people say, oh, there's so many horrible things happening in the world and it's just all getting worse every year. And I always wonder, well, is it worse or do we just hear more about it because there's more avenues of information, you know? And maybe it's always kind of been there but just never really recognized. What do you think? Do you think that mental health issues are progressing and becoming more common, or do you think we're just acknowledging them more?
I think that's probably a multifold question.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I stay in my lane.
I'm sorry.
Because, I would say we are pushing forward the conversation more.
Yeah.
And so we are creating an awareness of things, and we aren't burying things like we did in the past. We are more educated. We are more aware. So this is a good thing, because we are now putting, names to things, to behaviors, to observances that we once did not do.
Right.
But there are things that I think are more triggering, are more negative, and are pushing mental health challenges more.
So
especially my work with kids, social media.
Yeah.
It is a huge pusher. I mean, you have to look at if you really want to dive deep into this, you have to go the science researchy route.
Sure,
you have to read those journal articles. Yes.
The peer reviewed.
Yes, everything. Yeah. To see the mounting evidence against certain things like the news media and social media, and the things that are pushing those feelings. But I would just say, in general, we are just more aware.
Yeah.
And because I mean, brain chemistry, the brains have been around since human beings have been around. We are faced with different things now that trigger different neurons, different synapses, different thought processes. So yes, we are going to have different reactions. We might have amplified reactions. There are different things that have happened in society that did not previously happen. But when it comes to like something like PTSD, you can't tell me that somebody from like World War II soldiers and everything didn't feel the effects of that. I mean, child abuse and neglect has always been around.
Right,
so people, I'm sure, have always felt the effects of it. But because of the good work done, because of stars like Simone Biles, Michael Phelps, actors and actresses, people that are in the spotlight that are now talking more about their mental health issues.
Have a big platform and can reach a lot of people.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly what you said, though, too. I've thought, you read old war stories. You even go back to, like, the stories of the Persians and the Spartans and all that. And it's like, there's no way that through, since the beginning of time, and especially when it was hand-to-hand combat, things like that, there's no way these people were not affected by that. And, you might have your one person that is a little, I don't know the right term, sociopathic, that just loves it.
Mm-hmm.
But the general person, they're affected by that. And then as far as today, we're so inundated with all kinds of technology and inundated with information just left and right nonstop. And I'm not even saying it's a bad thing. I don't know that anything is inherently good or bad. There's just good and bad that comes with everything. And we're really in the genesis of it, this technological age. I feel like anyways, with it's really all just in the birthing stages of it. So who knows, time has to go by to even realize what kind of effects the rapid advancement of technology and civilization is creating for people.
Right. I mean, I even have work with seniors where people have come out and asked me to address certain things because there's this misconception that there are certain behaviors amongst the senior community, and there's a lot of mental health conditions that are going undiagnosed, even in the senior community.
Sure. Yeah.
Because we just attribute it to a part of aging.
Well,
just like we do with the teenagers.
They're young and that's just how young, or they're older and that's just, how older people act or how younger people act. And maybe some, pardon me, I haven't learned how to swallow my spit yet quite well. I've only had 38 years of practice, so I'll get that down eventually. And maybe some of it is, but a lot of it might not be either. And so I guess that's where, like you said, you kind of got to watch. And I always have read that it's what a person's baseline behavior is.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you can't necessarily diagnose or say, oh, this because I saw this happen one time. It's like, well, what's a person's baseline behavior? And are they starting to consistently deviate from that?
Yes.
And then that's a pretty good indication. They're like, hey, what's going on?
Yeah,
here,
it requires a significant time. There's a big difference between, when we're put up against the fire with pressures, whether you're a student or a working professional, a farmer, anybody has pressures and mental health challenges, good days, bad days. But, it's when the period lasts from, I think the general recommendation, a period of 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks seems to be the magical marker
for,
to start off. And as far as the general community, again, going to like read about what mental health is, what mental illness is, just looking at different conditions, get a very basic set of information, because you can start pointing and clicking, and then I know the big joke is, oh, I'm feeling this, and now I've WebMD'd myself into having five DSM conditions.
Right, yeah.
There's next steps.
Yes.
You know, if you feel this way, then you should consider this.
That's right.
And a lot of the material
in
my job. Yes,
and that's
what I do.
Exactly where you come in. And
right. Me and the printing company are best friends, and graphic design things. I take all of that researchy, very complicated terminology. I make nice graphics, maybe a QR code, some basics, just to get you leapfrogged and refer you on to something else.
Well, and it's a busy job, I'm sure, because you're talking about some marketing and stuff like that. It's not really the term I want to use in this particular situation, but you know, that kind of thing where you're dealing with graphic designs and. Mm-hmm. But also to try to appeal to various groups.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Certain kinds of things are going to appeal to these people, and certain kinds of things are going to appeal to older people or younger people. And so trying to narrow down and decide what is going to appeal to this group might not appeal to this group. So maybe we've got to do some things that, you know, I'm sure it's very busy for you.
For sure. But I mean, that's why they give me my paycheck, and you know, why we push our efforts forward. When I get asked for different events, I get asked well enough ahead of time.
That you can
kinda, like when we went to Thumb Ag Day. You know, I knew my audience, and so I put together a packet of farmer mental health stress.
Right.
And I kept it all information for that and just something that, you know, they would read. Because as we move forward in technology, I've noticed a lot of the references kind of force you to go online. And there's still something to be said for, you know, radio media, print media, and something that they can actually, you know, put in their hands and read.
And,
you know, some of us like reading books online. Some of us
do not
need something in our hands, or like we just kind of take advantage of the fact that people have smartphones and apps and such things.
Right.
And
but
maybe they
don't. Like you said, it's hard to remember that too, because there's still, I mean, like I said, we're in the genesis of all this, really. I mean, when you talk relative to time in general, it's what, the first smartphone came out just 20 years ago?
Probably.
About that. You know, I mean, the first iPhone. That's a very short period of time in the overall scheme of things. And so, like you said, there's still a lot of people that rely on the more typical media. So you don't want to just forget about that.
No.
You know?
No.
And it sounds like you're definitely not. So that's great. And then we were talking about that and talking about some technology and reducing stigma. We talked about that a little bit too, and I think that's a big thing. It's hard, like I was saying before we came on a little bit too, I think it's hard for, I know you had that men's health, I might not be saying it right, but the men's health therapy we were talking
about. Man therapy.
Yep,
there was
you go.
A big, yeah, big
that
campaign.
That was a big thing too, you know. I think that's a difficult thing more for our sex, typically, generally speaking, generically speaking, men are kind of like, you know, I don't know if I really want to delve into that, because I don't know if I want it to get around or people to know that I'm struggling. You know, there's a little bit of something to be said for that too.
Well, there's this expectation within that, you know, gender, that biological sex, that you know, how you identify, and it's the provider, it's the strong one, it's the I will just take care of myself, I will suck it up, I will not cry. I mean, that could be partially generational, but you know, there's those expectations. But I would think that would create a pressure base that would make you a ticking time bomb. And so somebody very creative came up with the Man Therapy campaign, and we collaborated with some community health partnership, and we just, you know, they have all sort of, they have rack cards, magnets, and you know, it's a very quick reference to here, and here are the facts, and here's why you also need to take care of your brain just like anybody else does.
Which is right, which is good, because you know, I mean, it's like you said, it's the same thing as appealing, you know, you gotta, whether you were at the farmer's ag thing, and so you created some things that would be specific to people that are in that line of work or in that lifestyle. It's the same that women, men, younger, older, all kind of respond to different things. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's a great campaign because, you know, you do. You need men out there that are strong and capable and can do that and grit and get through things. But you might need to address some things too once in a while, you know, and part of that ties into if you want to keep trying to be strong and keep trying to be out on the front lines of whatever your daily life is presenting, we might need to address more than just physical needs to be able to stay in that spot and keep moving forward. You know, everybody gets tired out. I remember one of the things that I think was most helpful to me one time, it was a therapist I saw, and with the OCD thing, he said, look, it's like, we're not trying to cure your OCD. That can't really be done. He said, but what we're trying to do is help you to learn how to live with it and how to use it more to your advantage when you can and how to function with it rather than just falling into, you know, I've had my periods of time. Like you said, you can't always explain it to people, but it's like, I can't get off the couch for 3 days.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. I'm just going to lay here. What's the point? You know? And you just get into that funk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people struggle with that, you know.
Yeah, and so stigma stops treatment.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Put it very boldly, not only in the mental health world, but substance use disorder, because we label people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're so bipolar. They're so this. They're so that. And part of stigma is to clear the misconceptions. You get your education on what it is and what it isn't, because it's a medical issue.
Right.
You know, your brain is misfiring.
Right.
It is not doing the right things it needs to be doing. So you have emotions, thoughts, behaviors that are negatively impacting you and stopping you from not only thriving, but living in some cases.
That's a great way to put it. Even take away not just thriving, but just being able to function enough to live.
Right. I mean, so I'll go to these fairs and I'll see our tablecloth and, you know, behavioral health. And there's the pause.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, we help you keep your brains on straight. And then it kind of breaks the tension, breaks the ice, gets the, you know, conversation started. But I found it easier when I started equating, you know, the brain is an organ and this physical entity, and it's your control center and all those chemicals and messages and everything that misfire. And so it starts to, again, clear up some of the misconceptions.
Right.
We have misconceptions based on just a history of how we've dealt with mental health.
Institutionalization movement, go back to the 50s, 60s, things like that.
Right. But then you have people who, you know, you evolve, you think, and they know better. Like President Kennedy with his sister, and like he saw the lobotomy treatment that went on and said, no, there has got to be a different way.
Yeah.
You do have, you know, certain programming, certain television, even certain images that perpetuate stereotypes. And when you let stigma rule, you size up the person, you put them in a category, you assume that they can't do anything. I mean, it steals people's livelihoods. It forces isolation. It makes you tiptoe around the conversation. I've been with Human Behavioral Health probably about 4 years now. I've lived with my own diagnoses for a while. And to this day, I still, in some instances, tiptoe around whatever. But if I got a blood test tomorrow that said, oh, I have cancer, man, people at my church would be lining up with potlucks and inspirational messaging
just
and telling me
out
I
of
can
the...
do it. But when you say, how's your day? And, oh, I'm having a bad mental health day, you get this backup.
How about them Tigers then?
We want to change the subject real quick. Right. We're still so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And this is what stigma has done. And I'm not, just because I say I have a mental health day, even just like learning about different conditions and different like starter points. Oh, I'm sorry to hear, like simply say, I'm sorry to hear that. Right. Is there anything I can do to help in this moment?
Right.
Or can I check back with you later?
And see.
No. And sometimes that in itself can give a person just enough leeway to say, oh, you know what? Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for checking in. Right. Thanks for not backing off.
It wasn't, thanks for not treating me like a leper.
Right. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Right. Like, I don't know what it is you think I'm going to do.
Right. Right.
You know,
right,
if, I right. mean, because yes, there are certain, there are severe, because mental illness ranges from very mild to severe.
Yeah.
And there are behaviors that come out that can be frightening and whatever. But again, when you educate yourself, you will be less frightened of it. I've taken so many CPR classes, but I still know, like, if it came down to it, and a person passed out, I would still have anxiety of like how many breaths and how many compressions.
Right.
Or if I saw somebody bleeding out, and we take a stop the bleed seminar. I know how to wrap a wound,
but I'm still
going to have that nervousness.
Right. Well, and
that's okay.
Why.
You're human.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
But you keep learning about these things. I teach, and you can register, like you can call here on behavioral health to get a class registered. I teach what's called mental health first aid. It tells you how to respond to mental health crises. And I teach QPR, question, persuade, refer, and that's specific to just suicide, you know, prevention.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's others out there. There's Safe Talk. There's Assist. There are trainings out there available to help you become more comfortable with facing these things, how to have the conversation. It's just about being human and empathy, because mental health is not it's a human issue.
Yeah, right. Oh. Well, and it's great that you have some of them programs that you talk about that you can kind of analogize to CPR or different things like that, or a bleed out situation and things, because that's why those courses are there, and that's why, you know, whether you're in the Army or anything, that's why you go through 100 drills before you meet the real life situation. Because they know when it's real life, you're going to have to partially fight the panic instinct.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've gone through some of this training and stuff, you can fall back on that and be able to get through it. So it's great to have that in place, whether it's CPR or like what you're talking about, how to deal with maybe someone who's struggling with a mental health crisis, things like that. If you've done a little bit of training on it, it's like, okay, this is maybe freaking me out a little bit, but I remember this from what I did, so let's go this route, you know?
Right. It's okay not to know what to say.
Yeah.
And even just saying that, you know what, I don't know how to respond to that. I care about you. I'm sorry you're going through that. But can I help you get to a place where, you know, we can get you some help?
Right.
Something, just anything.
Yeah.
There's no harm in being kind and just having a little empathy.
Yeah.
We have to stop looking at mental health conditions as weakness, as things people make up, things that aren't real.
Yeah.
There's enough information out there to assure you. Just like cancer, just like diabetes, mental health conditions are very real, and they have to have a specific approach, just like any other physical health treatment plan.
Sure. Well, and if you go back, it's interesting. You look back in history, some of the major figures throughout history that we all kind of look up to as like role models, Abraham Lincoln, Howard Hughes, created all this wild stuff, Nikola Tesla. You know, I'm sure struggled with some things too. And, so it's like, it's just another thing, another hurdle, you know, maybe it's not knee pain or things like that, but another hurdle.
Right.
You know, and there's ways to overcome it for sure. So I remember you're talking about empathy and stuff. It makes me think of my grandpa, and they're both passed away now. But my grandmother, she struggled with some different things, too.
Mm-hmm.
And she would have those kinds of days where it was like, just can't. For lack of a better word, can't do anything, you know, and would just kind of lay on the floor, unable to function.
Yeah.
And one of my sisters asked my grandpa. My grandpa was a 7'2", big guy, deep voice, but like a teddy bear. And they asked him, my sister asked, well, what would you do when she was like that? He's like, well, I'd just lay on the floor next to her and hold her hand and tell her it was going to be all right until she could get through it.
Right. And that's, you know, we hope that that's more of the reaction, but we're still evolving. We're still learning to do those things because, you know, kind of our first instinct is to use turn, you know, psycho, crazy.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Don't let them get the crazy out.
Right.
You know? If you want to have a sense of humor about your own condition, by all means, like whatever helps you. And if
we were talking.
Yeah. If you're in an audience where you're talking to people, you just want to make sure that the humor isn't stigmatizing language.
Right. Right.
You know, you want to just
know your audience.
Right. Be very careful about that because it just using the kind of language just perpetuates the myths and the misconceptions.
Right.
And again, it doesn't get anywhere close to treatment. You kind of have to wait for that person to evolve and be comfortable with themselves before
they can get to that point. That's why, like, we were talking about that a little bit too. I find for myself that humor helps. Mm-hmm. Humor helps a lot, but I usually is more self-deprecating humor until I know someone else is comfortable.
Right.
I see their level of comfort with humor. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, it's more just like a self-deprecating humor because maybe that helps them to feel more comfortable too, you know. I'll joke around and be like, oh, yeah, my time at the asylum. And it's like, oh, you know, maybe in their mind, like, oh, you know what, maybe he struggles too. So maybe I can feel a little calmer about this or a little more open to, you know, maybe I'm not just going to get lambasted by somebody.
Yeah.
You know, so there's all kinds of ways to go about that for sure. Mm-hmm. Now, you were going to talk about, were you talking about addiction too? I know we've been talking about the mental health stuff, or was I wrong about that? I know you do some stuff.
Yeah, so I definitely educate on substance use disorder, and that is the leading terminology now. I mean,
substance use disorder.
Right.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, if a person is diagnosed, because there's a big difference between substance use, substance misuse, and actual use disorder, it is in the DSM, it is. You know, it actually is considered a mental health condition because what does it do? It changes your emotions, your thinking, and
brain
your behavior.
Chemistry, yeah.
And those substances get a hold of your brain and all sorts of chaos. I had a recent workshop. I love the way the person put it. I'm in a chaotic relationship with substances.
That is a good way of putting it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, in my world, again, I educate on these things. Now, saying addiction isn't necessary. It's not stigmatizing, whatever, but calling, like, looking at the person, oh, yeah, that junkie,
that addict. Yeah,
You know, the list of terminology. And when you look up stigma and addiction, they have great references to kind of what language to use versus what language not to use. And again, just remembering that somebody got into this and we don't know their path. Was it a party and we dabbled and then we dabbled more?
Did they lose a kid?
Yeah.
Lose a whole family?
Yes. Was it a coping mechanism?
A traumatic.
And this is, again, why with mental health, we have to find the right coping mechanisms, healthy coping mechanisms, and aim for treatment, because one way of coping with mental health struggles is addiction. You know,
as a
result of PTSD. Or, you know, there's a lot of movies coming. They're fictionalized. They're dramatized.
But there's truth in those.
We have a whole opioid settlement dollars.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we have to be very careful about where our convictions stand on what it is. Because we get lots of people have habits, hurts, and hangups in other areas besides substances. It could be relationships, attachments, shopping, food.
Yes, sleeping.
Yes. But with substances, there's a lot been said. We don't need to spend our money on those people anymore. We don't need to emphasize treatment. We don't know how they got there. Again, everything is a choice. When you're diabetic and you choose to eat that candy bar, it's still a choice.
It's
a
not
steak
justifying
whatever.
Anything,
right.
But it's just saying, you know, it's understanding maybe where something came from and stuff like that.
Right. My job, of course, is it's always prevention.
Yes.
So when it comes to prevention with mental health issues, it's creating awareness, education. It is trying to get you on the front line before you're in a battle.
Just like preventative care and any other, you know, taking a mammogram every so often if you're a woman,
and
or
the same
a prostate
thing.
Exam every so often when you're a man, to make sure you're just keeping track and trying to prevent
Disasters. And so you are evaluating you know, is this recreational use? Is that, I mean, there are certain substances that are legal, certain substances that are illicit. I'm not here to make a judgment call on what your choice is. But again, when it's changing your emotions and thinking and behavior, and you now have a dependence on it, you need it to function every day.
Then it's,
right. And now we have a problem. And so this is where, again, empathy is learning about what it is, how it takes over your brain. And there's a whole world of just maladaptive behaviors that come out of addiction, self-preservation, and knowing it's wrong, like knowing it's destroying you,
but we'll
keep going back to it. I mean, that makes no sense to anybody, why anybody would want to do that. But think about in life, the things that people do that also cause that thing. I mean,
shopping,
how many people smoke cigarettes?
Smoking, drinking, shopping. I mean, I was anxious. I've been telling this to my wife lately, too. I'm like, look, sleeping. Anything can be an addiction. Yeah. Sleeping. When I
adrenaline.
Am over adrenaline.
Adrenaline
you know,
junkies.
It's whatever is helping you cope. And that's not, like you said, it's not even to say that anything in and of itself is necessarily wrong. We all need some things to take a break from the real world. It's just, I think once you get to that tipping point of this is helping me get through, whether it's sleeping, addiction, whatever, to now I can't function without this.
Right.
That you've kind of crossed over that line, whatever the this happens to be.
Yep.
And, you know, like you said, it's you can't always explain it necessarily eloquently either, because, you know, with addiction and just like with mental health, what you were saying earlier, people might think, well, that doesn't make sense. That's nothing to worry about. Why are you worrying? You might even know that rationally it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But there's just something that isn't quite like clicking quite right to allow you to get past it.
Right.
So, you know.
You know, in my world, I design these billboards. You know, I talk about the impact of substance use disorder and addiction. And so that's going to be the prevention side.
Yeah.
You know, we live in this county and I see a lot of things. I see, you know, I see people allow things in youngsters that, you know, you've got to wonder kind of what they're creating, you know,
like what effects
we have to be careful about creating a habit that we're later going to judge and not want to treat.
Doesn't seem like a big deal in the moment, but what down the road is that going
to
lead
to? So, of course, my world, it's all about the let's try to prevent before this gets to a treatment aspect.
Nipping things in the bud, so to speak.
Right.
But not to be cliche.
The privilege of my position is helping people understand once they're in the throes of something, how we can get them to a living and thriving life to the best of their capabilities.
Just because you've fallen into the throes of something doesn't mean, well, that's it. You know, there's still plenty of hope out there. And two, I think what you're talking about too is, you know, and I joke about this at different points in time about how we kind of live in a society that is over-offended and overheard and too touchy about things, but I don't think that's what we're talking about here. You know what I mean? So I will make jokes about that because there are some things where it's like, geez, you can't talk about anything. But this kind of stuff, talking about being empathetic, I distinguish that between being oversensitive to too many things. You know what I mean? There's a difference in my mind, and I'm definitely for trying to understand what someone's going through.
Yeah.
You know, because I have, it's like you said, I have my own struggles. I might not get with this person. And so my instant reaction would be like, well, that's stupid. But, well, there's things that I'm doing that are pretty stupid to other people, too.
Yeah.
So is it really stupid, or is it just we all struggle with our own things in our own ways?
Yeah, we do. I mean, again, empathy just means lying with the person. Just trying to get a taste of what they are and not trying to joy them out of their situation, not trying to always come up with the solution.
Sometimes, you just need to be there.
And when you believe in evolution of human thought, yes, It doesn't matter what somebody is sensitive to or whatever. Just respecting their opinion. It mm-hmm. may be different than yeah. yours, but you know, ask them why. What about that? You know, offends you? What about that?
Right.
Are you sensitive to? Because it costs you nothing to be respectful yeah. of somebody else's standpoint. Because when push comes to shove, if there's you, like you said, if it comes to you.
Right.
And there's something uniquely to you that right. you don't like, you'd want that person to exercise the same reaction.
At least the mm-hmm. right. And that doesn't mean you have to agree.
Yeah, right.
Either.
At the end of the day.
That's the thing too. I mean, right. every single person is different from every other single mm-hmm. person to a degree. So that's not to say that you have to agree with
right.
how they think about things either, but you can at least understand, well, for even if I don't get it, for whatever reason, that's where they're at. And you know, where do we go from here?
Yeah, it probably takes more than just a casual interaction.
Well, that's fair enough. Yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's fair enough yeah. too. I mean, nobody ever really gets to know someone in just one passing
nope.
conversation.
How are you doing today? I'm fine.
Yeah, okay. I'm fine. I'm fine. Yeah, well, they're fine.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
I mean, we all wear many masks mm-hmm. every day. You know, to get through the day. So to get through some of those, like an onion, mm-hmm. it takes a few more interactions than just the one passing casual. I suppose for
yep.
sure.
It does.
Very good. Is there anything else? I see we're running up on our 11 o'clock news and stuff here. What else? Is there something else you'd like to touch on at all?
I would say, you know, we've addressed, you know, being aware, learning about the conditions, learning what's out there for you. You know,
yes,
treatment
yeah.
services. You know, yeah. we have here in behavioral health, that's community mental health. There are private psychological, you know, doctors. And sometimes even starting with your primary care doctor, there are now screenings available in the world of medicine because there's a big push to not only like to assess their physical symptoms, but kind of do screenings for what may be going on because the person may not feel comfortable right
yeah.
away going to a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
But at least, and if especially if they have a established relationship with their provider, this is an opportunity
to
you know, using technology at the best. You know,
yeah.
the apps that are available. Some
yeah.
people desire that privacy. Some people
right.
don't want to
be
out and about it. So
right.
there's apps. And then, you know, if you're very invested in, pushing mental health to the forefront, the conversation, look what's going on in public policy and the national level
yeah.
and, you know, what our insurance covers. Right now we have a provider shortage crisis and a bed crisis.
Yeah.
You know, we're having things like prisons be, you know, treatment institutions because we have nowhere to put people who definitely need inpatient residential treatment.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things matter, just like you would want any kind of doctors available for any of your other health
and
conditions.
And have your other right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I didn't know, I know, I think I put down here too a little bit of information.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you want for your
yeah,
desk
yeah.
number, like
right.
for you
and that,
specifically,
yes, they, yeah,
I see
right.
that.
Because I will, if I can't help them, I will refer them.
That's
on.
What I mean. Because,
yeah,
like I said, I mean, not to, again, but mm-hmm. very nice directory. You're a directory. You're
yes.
a choreographer.
Right.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, one a number, if anyone's interested, they could give you a call. Your desk number is 989-269-9293. Extension 111, and that's funny. I actually remember the 9293 from mm-hmm. my days of
yep.
calling there and being there a little bit. And then a website for you guys, they can check out here on cmh.org.
Yes,
does that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
I got that right.
Yep.
Look at me, just hitting all the balls thrown at me. I'm going to tell them upstairs to make sure they mark it on the calendar that I didn't strike out today.
I think we both did a good job.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I think you took the spotlight for sure. I was just kind of lying in the wings, but you're a natural. So, well, thank you for being here today and for coming on and talking. I think we got to do it again because there's so much that you can cover that it would definitely be nice to have you back at a point where it would work for you sometime too.
That would be great. Just to get these conversations started is just so vitally important.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Because you know there are walks for awareness for all sorts of causes and conditions, and so this is just one of those things that, you know, May Mental Health Awareness Month, we are coming up to September, that's, you know, Suicide Prevention Awareness Month. The Huron County Suicide Prevention Coalition has its walk for awareness coming up on September 9th, and there there's Elkton Assure Health is sponsoring Elkton 5K, the same thing.
I know our news director, there's a plethora of information to get out there. I know our news director, Dina Bruderick, she's been doing a good job writing some different stories about, I mean, just all kinds of stuff like that, like the 988 national hotline and the different things you guys are doing in the different community events that are about that kind of stuff. And that's why it'd be great to have you on again, because it's not just a one-off thing. You know, it's nice to throw a reminder out there every once in a while and remind people that there's things available.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you. Joined today by Erica Stedman, Prevention Specialist with Huron Behavioral Health.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this What Do You Think edition.
Yeah, now I know stuff.
And be sure to keep your ears tuned closely to AM 1340 and 94.1 FM for our next What Do You Think program.